going to call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Steve Kmorkowitz. Here. Clyde Allen.
Here.
Mike Serf.
Here.
Item 4, minutes of the meetings, and this is for March 4th, 2013, presented to board members in written form.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any additions, corrections? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 5, public hearing. First one being item A, consider resolution 1307, approving the request of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for a discontinuance of a portion of 93rd Street between Lakeshore Drive and 3rd Avenue within the Carroll Beach Estates Unit Number 5A subdivision.
Mr. Chairman, this is the request of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, who owns the vacant land adjacent to 93rd Street as shown on the overhead between Lakeshore Drive and 3rd Avenue. They are requesting to vacate the street right-of-way and remove the link that adjoins the block that supports several threatened and endangered plant species by creating a more contiguous habitat that will benefit these species. On the slide shows that area proposed to be vacated, 93rd Street, between Lakeshore Drive and 93rd Street. Pursuant to Map 30 and 32 of the Regional Planning Commission report entitled the Land Use Management Plan for Chewaukee Prairie, Carroll Beach area of the town of Pleasant Prairie, this portion of 93rd Street is proposed to be vacated or discontinued when all the adjacent properties are owned by a public entity. And at this time, they are all owned by a public entity, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Municipal sanitary sewer, water, and storm sewer infrastructure were not constructed within said right-of-way. Upon removal of the roadway, the Wisconsin DNR intends to maintain a gravel pathway adjacent to this abandoned roadway for pedestrian walkway purposes. The Plan Commission held at their meeting on March 11th recommended that this be vacated.
That being said, I will open it up to public comment question.
There were no sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anybody wishing to speak on this item? Hearing none, I'm going to close. Did you make a move on me there?
Good evening. Marty Johnson, Wisconsin DNR, address 9531 Rain Road, Sturtevant, Wisconsin, 53177. I just wanted to mention at the last meeting there was a discussion of creating some type of path for the residents to use as a walkway through there. Gene Werby Harris and I had traded emails. Putting gravel in may be difficult just because of the wetland nature of the area, but we're willing to put in trails in certain areas so that people can access from Lakeshore Drive to 3rd Avenue or 4th Avenue. And I just had a map of a particular location where we're going to put one of our trails, and I didn't know if the board wanted that now, or commission, I'm sorry, wanted to see that now, or I could just leave it.
It's going to be a gravel trail, eh?
Because of the wetland natures, I think gravel is going to be difficult to do, but we're willing to mow an area, and then anywhere area that has wetness, we're going to put a footbridge over there so that people can get across it so they won't have to walk through any swales or anything like that.
Isn't that road gravel now?
It is gravel right now, but for us to leave a path in that particular location would be extremely difficult with the equipment that they're using because they'll be basically scooping up. Contractors are basically planning on working from 3rd or 4th Avenue and moving eastward. And so they're basically scooping out, not working in the prairie at all and not leaving anything there. So it, with the size of the buckets, it would just be extremely difficult to leave anything that would be workable.
Okay. Mike?
Have you guys, as DNR, explored the option of, have you picked a contractor yet?
We have.
Okay. Because I think you wouldn't have to put a new path in. I think it would just be reducing the size of the bucket that you're working on to excavate that size and leave a 3-foot, 4-foot remnant of the road there, and that would be your path. You'd have less material to haul out of there. You should be able to get a better price for less excavation, and you wouldn't have to put a path back in. You wouldn't have to go through the trouble to do that. It might be the least costly alternative to approach that problem. Unless your goal is to rip everything out. And then
well, that was the initial goal of the project, that we would have a linkage. Leaving a path there would basically still leave a barrier between the two. Obviously, it would be smaller, but it would still be somewhat of a barrier compared to
just if you take it all out, you'll never really, I mean, if you put chips down or just let people walk around, I mean, it'll be, realistically, there's not going to be a path across there unless it's dry.
Well, we were looking at doing a different path, a different location, a little higher ground.
Mike, does that road have any problems now with water going over the top?
No. Well, I mean, you know, if we get a lot of rain, all those roads have water. I don't know when it's bad, but.
The area marked in red is a basic little higher ground. It had a lot of trees that we've been slowly clearing out, and so it would provide an option for us to put a path through there. But then also, like I said, if there's any locations where they might be a little wet, we can put a footbridge. If you look further down on Lakeshore Drive, there's also kind of a clump of trees in that block to the south. We own around that block. That's also higher ground, and we're willing to put a path down there as well. So there would be two locations where people could get from Lakeshore Drive to the next road over.
Peggy, would you mind giving Marty the pointer so I could see on the map where he's talking? Thank you.
It's right here.
There you go, the yellow button. So for the north path, there's a house right here, so the path would come across and over. And then you can't see on the map further down south. We'd be willing to put it in another path, higher ground, that would provide access from Lakeshore to 3rd Avenue and then also 3rd Avenue down here. But basically going like this, kind of a jagged line.
Did you see you're getting close to a house coming across there?
Yeah, and we could even move it over a little bit too.
Well, you know, if you had the, Marty, just amazing. If you have the road already there, like Mike says, once you use the gravel that's already there, avoid the path next to the house. You know, you might, I don't know how the people are going to feel about a path going next to their house.
That's a good point. I guess the intent of the project was to remove the road completely. And so by leaving a portion of it, it still doesn't achieve completely the goals that we're looking for.
I think you can do this relatively cheaply if you just.
Were you going to, were the new paths you're proposing, I'm sorry, Mr. President, were they going to be gravel as well?
Because of the wetland nature, we couldn't address putting fill in there for a path. So it's kind of a catch-22 there for us.
Fine. Thank you. I guess my question would be, why would you not leave a portion of 93rd Street there as your footpath, dig out a portion so the two areas can be connected, and put your footbridge over that? And that way you do have your one area that's completely across, with just putting in a footbridge just there. I guess that saves money, and it sounds like it's the most reasonable thing to do. But
John, this isn't obviously going to cost us anything, except if you're considering putting a footpath where this is marked on this paper, I think we have to consider that house that's presently there that you're going to be coming relatively close to. You know, Marty, I would highly recommend you use part of that road for your crossover. You know, I give it some thought on this. I mean,
well, the dilemma that we run into is that we're in a tight time frame. Contractors are ready to go out and start work, and we're trying to get work done by the end of this month, which obviously is not going to be very easy. We can talk to the contractors about leaving. They haven't started anything. They probably aren't going to start until later this week if everything works out. But I guess from your standpoint, a path is something that is desired, a gravel path.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, because it's there already. If we just make it wide enough so that's all it is, I mean, we don't want people driving on it either, but if it's, we end up with a 3-foot path, I mean, it's really, I mean, it's not going to have a lot of traffic on it, but if the path right now is, if the gravel drive is 14 feet, you think?
From side to side, it's roughly about 22.
22.
Yeah.
So if you take out 18 feet, 19 feet, just have them, a bucket should be 8 feet, so you'd have two runs with a bucket for the front end loader. Just a little bit more. I mean, it's just all the less they're going to have to take out, and it's, to put anything back in to create a path. Does it be there? I mean, I'm not opposed to you guys making it a narrow path. I mean, it should be just like a walking path to get from one place to another, but as opposed to recreating another path, especially if it's going to be close to a house, and that if it goes close to a house, if you have to go farther north, then you're not too far from the next cross street.
Marty, just curious, what's the contract cost of this?
We have a contractor from Franksville, and it's running roughly about $17,000-$18,000.
Does it endanger a grant if you leave the road there?
I'd have to check on that, possibly. I mean, this was one of the key points of the grant, in complete removal of the road. Obviously, a reduction in size is better than nothing, but it doesn't have the same benefit as having a complete connection.
Marty, has anyone been in contact with the homeowner that would be affected with this path?
No, and we thought it over, and obviously we didn't think it completely through. And we have other locations, like I said, we are in the process of buying several of these lots here, going all the way up to the next street to 91st Place. So we do have locations there that we could have put a path, higher ground, that wouldn't be right next to the house.
You already got... You got the path made. Just make it smaller. Is there going to be a problem if we tell you that we'd rather see the path right where the road's at?
I can't tell you that. There may be. Just from the standpoint, the grant was written in a way that the road would be removed completely.
Okay.
No comment on that.
The area to the south.
I got to be honest with you. If what Monica just brought up, if that homeowner doesn't mind that path, how close could it be? Within 10, 15 feet of the home? 20
feet? We could make it two lots away from the home.
Two lots?
Yeah,
well,
two lots away.
90 feet?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a little distance, sorry.
No. The way I have it on the map here, you're correct, but we can move it two lots to the north.
Oh.
That's after you purchase the other lot.
Right, but we have an option out there, and they're willing to sell, so I think it's pretty much a done deal.
Well, that would probably be a better option if we are not affecting anybody. I'm just trying to save you some work and some money here, but obviously that.
Any other questions for Marty?
I don't care too much about that. I'm sorry. I don't care too much about that indication in the map, the arrow going across Lakeshore. That shouldn't even be there.
Correct. The extent for road removal would be basically kind of up to where it's paved.
That one should
go all the way to Lakeshore.
That red arrow shouldn't even be there. That's somebody who doesn't always know here, I look at that, so they're going to come right to my house. I think that somebody got to think a little better than that. Oh, you did it? Okay.
Yeah, that's why showing generally where 91st Street is.
Okay.
There's a paved apron that's right here, and obviously we'd stop at that point and probably a little before that.
Okay. Thank you, Marty.
Would it be acceptable if we approved this with the alternate path cutting through not close to the home?
Yeah. That'd be your recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And you can make an okay on that one. You can't make an okay on the road?
Yeah.
Okay.
But unfortunately, from the standpoint, like I said, the whole intent was to provide a connection between the two blocks, and having a path there is not going to...
Move approval of 1307 with the alternate... What's that?
Public hearing.
Oh, we got public hearing. I'm sorry.
We got to play by the rules. This isn't Mike's house, you know.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to speak?
Hi, my name is Terry McMahon. I'm 6407 107th Street. In regards to this plan, I just want to ask that it's going to come back to you people for final approval before the work starts.
Anyone else? Hearing none, I'm going to close the public hearing, open up board comment or question.
I'd move approval of 1307 with the alternate path being further north than what it's planned.
I second that.
Motion by Mike, second by Steve. Any further discussion on this item?
I have an issue with the homeowner not being notified.
That's why it's going further north. It's going to be 90 feet away.
Yeah. If property is purchased, if and when.
Well, they already own the property.
You own the property, don't you? No.
They have lots further north they're going to purchase in order. That would be the condition of moving the trail.
Oh, I misunderstood.
So we you want your resolution to read.
I'll withdraw my motion.
When
we make,
make,
we
it,
make the approval contingent upon favorable response from the property owner that where they want to put the path until they buy the property, right?
That's fine. Yes.
Okay.
Is that okay with the second?
Yeah.
Same motion, we're just clarifying it.
Yeah, that's okay. All right.
If I provided the copy of the option, would that help in terms of convincing the village that we're
well, I guess the board wants to see it going north.
Right.
So
right.
We're taking your word for it, you're going to buy those lots.
I can
and
still provide
you
the option.
If you buy those lots, then you would put the trail farther north so it doesn't affect that property owner.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So carries. That being the only public hearing, move on to item six, citizens' comments.
No sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anybody wishing to speak under citizens' comments? Hearing none, move on to item seven, administrator's report.
Nothing tonight.
Moving on to item eight, new business. Item A, consider the 2013-2014 property and liability insurance proposals.
Mr. President and the Village Board, I have in front of you a proposal for insurance, liability, and property insurance. This is the first year of a new three-year bid cycle for insurance. Therefore, we actually went out and requested proposals from all interested companies. We actually had three brokers working, trying to get bids from different insurance companies. One of the brokers was also asking for a bid from Liberty, but actually Liberty is actually, at the current time, not bidding on municipalities anymore and actually non-renewing municipalities. They do not want most of their business to be workman's comp. They want their business to be more balanced. So we were not able to get a quote from Liberty, or there was a number of other insurance companies that some brokers were going after, too. And at this time in the insurance market, they were saying that our claims were actually a little bit too high for them to bid. They were looking for none or very little claim activity on an account. So only two companies submitted proposals for liability coverage this year, and the premiums are listed on the letter that I have enclosed in your packet. One came from our current carrier, League of Wisconsin Municipalities, for a total bid with property coverage of $480,229. And community insurance, which we had before Liberty probably about 5-6 years ago, they came in with a bid of $526,739. I'm actually recommending the League, the lower price company. We've been with them for 3 years. We've been very happy with their service in terms of claim processing and also on the front end helping us with loss control and meeting with our managers to help them identify areas of improvement to help us not have a loss. The chart up front shows you the premiums from last year from the League, and it compares it to the current proposal from the League of Municipalities. The liability coverage from the League went up a little, and that's based on our exposures, like more payroll, more miles of road, that kind of thing. Workman's comp from the League is our largest increase in premium, because overall our premiums look at a 9% increase compared to last year, but it's all factored mainly into workman's comp. And that's really uncontrollable by the actual bidders. They have set formulas they have to work with to bid workman's comp. Our payrolls went up. That's probably one-third of the reason that we went up. But one of the bigger reasons is that actually the rates per category went up, and those rates per category is set on a statewide level based on claims and experience for all municipalities in the state. So we don't have any direct effect on that. Well, we're a very small portion of that, but those rates actually went up across a lot of our categories. Our actual workman's comp mod stayed very similar. So the major reason was the change in rates, which are set by the state. For property insurance, we're looking at an increase in property insurance. The property fund is reviewing and changing it as we pretty much speak at times. They had a big, huge loss, a flood loss, actually, of over $11 million. A high school up in the suburbs of Milwaukee. So they actually have eliminated flood coverage, which we've had in the past. So if you're in a floodplain, which a couple of our lift stations are, and our compost building out on Springbrook, they will not cover that for flood damage. Then they also have limited our coverage for inundation of water. If, like, you have a large, like, 10 inches of water falling, that's what happened at the high school up in Milwaukee, and that rain came down so fast that it came into the building and did a lot of damage. They limit that coverage to $1.5 million. We did have another quote from Chubb. The Chubb quote was higher than what we currently have here. The quote here for the local government is $37,000. For 65, whereas Chubb was 58,916, so it's a big premium increase. So I'm recommending the property stay with the local government with this increase in risk in terms of flood for the couple of stations and inundation of water. Auto physical damage, I'm actually recommending to switch to the league. The league now has a program that will offer similar coverage as the local government at a cheaper price, a savings of $7,700. They will be offering us replacement cost on the fire trucks and the ambulances, the bigger units that we have. So that I'm recommending the league for that. And then for boilers and crime, we're looking at the same carriers, Liberty for boiler and CNA for crime, with a slight increase there of $400-some. So overall, we're looking at a premium increase of $39,577 over the previous year. But we are budgeted at a higher amount than that. We're actually budgeted at, it's in the letter. I mean, we're underneath. Oh, the village budget is $500,000, $502,706. Which is $20,000 less than what we currently have as a proposal set forth. As for dividends, the league is estimating a 10% dividend, about $40,000. It's all based on experience and longevity that we have with the league. This previous year, 2011, we did not get a dividend. The experience with the league wasn't that good to offer a dividend. This coming year, they're expecting some kind of dividend to be paid out. So I have Rick Kelscher here from R&R Insurance. He's the representative that has brought forth this bid with the league and also has brought forth the Liberty and CNA quotes for boiler and crime. The only quote that he did not bring forth was local government property insurance fund.
Kathy, what was the, and I think it was in 11 or maybe it was 10, I lost track of it, but didn't the state on the same fund that's getting limited on a property fund, didn't they give us a rebate?
Yeah, they gave us a pretty substantial rebate, like 30 or 40,000, yeah. I can recollect. Yeah, and now 2 years ago.
Now they're raising rates because they're...
Now they're raising rates because they had a huge claim and they're reevaluating how they do coverage.
Take the money back.
What was that?
Take the money back. But they knew us, they take it back.
Yeah, they took it back. They're also reevaluating, Because right now they're pretty trusting the municipalities to report in what their values are. And I don't know if they'll be changing this as doing actual appraisals on some stuff because they're figuring maybe some companies, whatever you report in, they'll still replace it even though you might have reported and paid premiums on a lower amount. So, they might be reevaluating that area too. They're just, Rick might be able to explain better what they're all doing with the local government property insurance fund, but if you have any questions for Rick.
Rick, you want to come up? Just give us your name.
R&R Insurance in Waukesha, and we're the representatives for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities Insurance Program. Just to dovetail with what Kathy was saying, Mike, you are correct that the property fund declared a premium holiday, I think, 2 years ago. And the insurance commissioner now looks at it, and they're about short the amount of money they gave back on the quote premium holiday. That and the loss that Kathy referred to up in Milwaukee, it was about an $11, $12 million loss. And because of that, it was actually Nicolet High School. And they actually call it the Nicolet change or the Nicolet endorsement. They're limiting your coverage for inundation of water to $1.5 million.
So whatever happened in Milwaukee is going to affect us, correct?
That was with the local government property fund. And the local government property fund is a quasi-state program, and it's only the only people that are allowed to participate in it are public entities or what I would call quasi-public entities. I believe Lambeau Field, when I talk to the people at the insurance commissioner's office, Lambeau Field is insured in the local government property fund.
We'll pay with taxes anyway.
Rick, do you see any other changes coming down the line for the local government property insurance fund?
I think there'll probably be, from what we can see right now, I think there'll probably be increased rates in the future. I think you're right that they will end up doing appraisals or asking communities to get their properties appraised because some communities have underappraised their properties. So they want to make it fair so that one community isn't paying too much, one community is paying too low because they have their property underappraised. So they're going to try to fair it up. And I just want to make everyone aware, the local government property fund does not use any type of agents. So we're fans of the local government property fund. I don't represent them. I can't tell you what their philosophy is. I can only relate to you my experience from working with other public entities.
Yeah, I'll make
a motion to approve.
Thank you.
The proposal. Oh, I'm sorry. Make a motion to approve the proposal as recommended by staff.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike. Further discussion. Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item B, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation, consider ordinance 13-09, amending section 420-148-B, paren 25.1 of the Village Zoning Ordinance, to allow the Planning Commission, as part of the conditional use permit, to extend the hours of operation of convenient cash businesses on a case-by-case basis and require all new and expanded convenient cash businesses to comply with the Village's security ordinance, that being Chapter 410 of the Village Municipal Code.
Thank you. On March 11th, the Plan Commission held a public hearing and recommended that the ordinance be changed to allow cash convenient business requirements to be amended. Currently, there's a lot of facilities that fall under cash convenience stores, like the payday loans, the cash for gold, and things like that. The other thing that falls into this are resale of, for instance, musical instruments. And those types of business that still fall under this cash convenience that we want to keep under this cash convenience, so they have to follow all the other regulations that we have set forth. Some of those businesses that are really retail operations do a lot of their businesses during the weekend hours. Currently, the ordinance does not allow any Sunday hours for operation and limits the hours from 9 to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. This amendment recommends that the Plan Commission may, on a case-by-case basis, expressly approve extended hours as part of their conditional use permit. So, for instance, going back to this music store, a gentleman from Music Around who is currently in the city looking possibly to relocate in the village would like to be open on Sundays and have that consideration made by the Plan Commission if he brings forward a conditional use permit. The other amendment that we're proposing is that any new or expanded cash convenient business shall comply with the requirements of the village's security ordinance, which is Chapter 410 of the village ordinance. This does allow and helps the community in surveilling the parking lot and the entrances of these businesses that would help in any incidences that may occur out there to our village police department. Again, the Plan Commission held a public hearing and is recommending approval of the ordinance amendment as presented.
Mike.
Peg, I know I was at the Plan Commission. I know we made the approval, but what's the difference with what this company is going to do than the Piggly Wiggly or Kohl's or Super Value? They're getting a product in and they're selling it up.
No, they can purchase.
Play it against sports is another. That's not in the village. So.
Correct, but if they wanted to come to the village, they would not be able to be open on Sunday unless the Plan Commission gave them approval to do so.
I understand that, but I'm looking at this business as no different than any other retail businesses out there. I mean, they're not loaning cash out on Sunday. They're not the payday loans. This isn't the same. At least I don't see.
But our definition for a cash convenience includes secondhand. They have to have more than 40% of their inventory. 80 or 90% of the inventory being like played again, sports or music around our secondhand articles. And that ordinance includes those as well as payday loans and jewelry stores. If they sell certain amounts, so those are all captured in this. So this would allow the Plan Commission, at a conditional use permit procedure, to possibly extend the hours for those that are more typically retail uses.
Larry liked it.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-09.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Clyde.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mike, or I guess I'd like to get an opinion. Could this come back and bite us as being prejudicial to other businesses that we may want to be close to the guidelines and they be denied?
Well, to me, the significance in this is that it separates itself from a payday loan because you're not loaning money out, and these businesses are not, pawning these instruments or music out. You know, there isn't, the gap between this and say Sony, which at Sony is all rehabbed, refurbished equipment. This isn't. I don't know how much is refurbished. These people take it as is and then sell it as is, or if they refurbish it. So, maybe I think the real question that we may want to think about is, do we just even want to have these businesses in that ordinance that governs the payday loan group or not? I think as far as hours are a lot more strict than what we're talking about. I mean, we restrict hours at midnight. You can go up to midnight on Saturday, right?
Correct.
And we're talking about not going that far on this. So, I mean, if there's a difference, it would be between a payday loan store or a pawn shop versus, a music around who's taking musical equipment in from kids and then reselling it to another group of kids, which is they're not holding this for money to get it out of Hawk. It's just they put it in and take it out. And maybe the policy question is, as we cast that net to control the payday loan businesses and the pawn store shops and the gold and silver and all that stuff, we might have cast it a little too broad, including these guys in. I think that really is the question that we want to think about, whether or not those guys get carved out and they just stay with the retail businesses.
And I guess we talked about that, and who do you carve out? Okay, so now we know musical instruments and maybe sporting equipment. Is there going to be someone else the next month and the next month? And, all of a sudden we need to start carving these things out. So that was one of the reasons we came up with what the Plan Commission at the public hearing, based on the facts that are presented, determined
if this use is acceptable in this location and the hours, set the specific hours. Most of these places aren't looking to be open till midnight, like is allowed in that district. Most of them want to be open until like 6 o'clock at night, and they want to be open on Sunday. I'm talking about the like played against sports and the musical round. So we recommend this going this route instead of having to come back, okay, now it's someone selling furs, now it's someone selling records, now it's someone selling used CDs. So that's why we as a staff had talked about going this route.
Okay. I understand.
What would the difference be if for a used car lot? Where you buy a car and you turn around and sell it?
That doesn't classify. There are certain things listed in the secondhand ordinances of the state and municipal ordinances that limit certain things, and automobiles is not one of them. Same with secondhand clothing. That is not covered in this either. There are some exceptions that are specific in the state's ordinance that we carried through ours.
I just have the fear that somebody decides they're going to sell a musical instrument to this place, but they decide they want to buy it back for a 10% premium. What's the difference between that and a pawn shop? Just raising the question, I don't want it to come back and bite us.
Well, yes, pawn shop, you know, they're holding it, you know, for you, and you got a certain amount of time to come back and get it, and there's going to be a fee associated with that. My understanding of the music around or played again, there's a market rate established for a used treadmill or a clarinet. And if you sold it for less, you got what you got. But if you want to buy it, again, I don't know if they refurbish them or they fix them back up. But
The guy who came forward is satisfied with what we did. The difference between a payday loan and a pawn shop is they chase the poor. This musical instrument exchange is not doing that. And, you know, this is fine for now, but in the future, like Clyde said, I just hope it doesn't come back to bite us. But I move approval of 1309. Or Montague,
I think
I'm
we
sorry.
Already had a motion. Yeah, right.
You said it so softly, I didn't hear you.
Any further discussion?
You know, it's a difference, too. In the cash shop, there got to be a minimum a mile between them. There is a distance between the physical location of the office, correct?
There is a physical location of cash convenience stores to daycares, churches, schools, and any other cash convenience store.
Between
just the cash, is between, correct?
One mile.
Well, 300 feet to a church or a daycare, and half a mile to any other cash convenience business.
Oh, half a mile. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Other comment or question? If not, we have a motion, a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, consider resolution 1308, and this is to initiate a zoning text amendment to clarify home occupation requirements.
By the home occupation requirements, home occupations are currently allowed in agricultural and residential districts for homeowners or occupants who reside in the home that they're requesting the occupation in. Home occupations are intended to be incidental to the residential character of the area. It has come to light that there's been some misunderstanding or some clarification needed to define that a home occupation is intended to be for someone who lives in the home. So we are looking just to clarify the ordinance that is the intent by putting additional language in there that further explains that the intent of a home occupation is to be done by the person who lives in the home. So this resolution is proposing to clarify and amend the home occupation requirements and is referred to village staff for further study and recommendation. We will bring this forth at a public hearing when that proposed language is ready to be heard.
Peggy, are you saying that it's the homeowner working out of his home and can he have employees bringing into the home to work out of there also?
Currently, the ordinance allows for two non-residents to be employed as part of the home occupation, but always has been the intent that the person that we issue the home occupation to is someone who lives at the home, not a secondary home that they may sleep in one night a month, one night a week. It needs to be the home where they reside. And so we want to get that clarified so there is no misunderstanding or room for other interpretations of the zoning ordinance. Okay.
Motion to approve 13-08.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item D, consider sewer D access maintenance path wetland mitigation bank credit purchase.
Members of the board, the completion of the sewer D path in 2010 to finally complete that path, we are going to need to fill 0.57 acres of wetlands. And the reason for the path is to allow Public Works to clean the siphons underneath the ditch on a periodic basis. So the figure up on the wall there, area one is where we crossed the existing ditch there where sewer D used to discharge. That's approximately 0.48 acres of wetlands that we have to fill in to complete the maintenance path. And then on the east side of the property, there's 0.09 acres of wetlands that are need to be filled in because of the path. The DNR and the Army Corps of Engineers require mitigation when you do fill in wetlands, and they stipulate a particular ratio of mitigation. In this particular case, the ratio was 1.32 to 1, which results in a mitigation amount of 0.75 acres. We managed to secure a credit with the Northland Wetland Mitigation Bank, which is in the northern part of the state. So we need 0.75 credits. They charge $50,000 per acre. So what I'm recommending that the board approve the purchase of 0.75 credits at $37,500 so we can complete this project. Just as a further bit of information, in doing the mitigation, there's a number of options. We could have chose to mitigate on site, but my experience and individuals that I've talked to do on-site mitigation would end up being more costly. You have to go through a very severe or a very strict planting guidelines. There's testing and there's maintenance requirements that go on for a period of 10 years. So even though this is a lot of money, it's my estimation that it would end up being less than having to do on-site mitigation. So I'm recommending that this credit be purchased from the mitigation bank.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Further discussion?
I don't quite understand where the money went to go.
Excuse me?
I don't quite understand where the money is coming from. Where are we going to get the money?
This money comes from the sewer utility.
Oh, the sewer utility?
Yes.
Okay.
Part of the project to construct that main to abandon the treatment plant.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's still money. It's
still no, that's why I want to make sure of that. Thank you.
We have a motion. We have a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item E, consider an award of contract to design the park and ride facility in Prairie Springs Park.
Mr. President, members of the board, back on January 21st, the board executed an agreement with the DOT so that the village could receive funding for the Pleasant Prairie Park and Ride, which is to be built off of Turwell Terrace just south of Recplex. Now that that agreement has been executed, the next step was to hire a consultant to do the design of the park and ride. There was a two-step process that we undertook to hire a consultant for this project. The first step was to evaluate the firms based on their qualifications, and then the second step was to open up a compensation requirement. This particular project, because the village is paying for the design, we were allowed to ask for compensation. A lot of times when there's state or federal money, it's strictly qualifications based. So we received three proposals from R.A. Smith National, Crispell Snyder, and Benesch. We had a selection committee that reviewed the proposals, and R.A. Smith National was the consensus firm based on qualifications. In addition, we did open up their compensation, and their compensation of $173,841 was also the low amount. I also want to note that in our budget, the estimated engineering services was right around $200,000. So we are in good shape as far as the budget. R.A. Smith National actually did some of the preliminary engineering for the park and ride. They have extensive experience. Their environmental capabilities, because there will be some wetland challenges on this project. So we believe that they will do a good job. If you can go to the next slide, Peggy. This is the schedule for the contract. It's a fairly ambitious schedule, but we're hoping ultimately where it says final PS&E, that's plans, specifications, and estimates. And basically what that is that's the last step prior to advertising for a contractor. So it is our goal to build this facility next year. Gary Roche from R.A. Smith National is here if you have any additional or have any questions for the consultant, or I'd be glad to answer any other questions from you.
Gary, anything further to explain? Any questions for Gary? Hearing none, thank you for being here.
Isn't this some of this funding coming from the county?
The county gave us their grant for $450,000.
It's actually $371,000.
Okay. Okay. I would move approval for the R.E. Smith.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item F, consider an award of contract for the Cooper Road Sewer Rehab Phase 2 project.
Mr. President, members of the board, the Pleasant Prairie Sewer Utility is planning a second phase of the multi-year rehabilitation project for the Cooper Road drainage basin. The area is generally located north of 85th Street to 76th Street along Cooper Road west to 56th Avenue. This year will include relining of sanitary sewer mains on Cooper Road from 79th to 85th Street. And, there's an attached map up there showing the location. The sewer was originally constructed in the 50s, and it's the whole project, the whole basin itself, is about 2.5 miles of clay sewer main and a couple hundred of 6-inch clay laterals. The area has been subject to sewer backups and high sewer flows during rain events. The flow will increase almost 10 times higher than during dry conditions. The suspected causes of these high flows are infiltration of groundwater into the sewer mains, laterals, and illegal sump pump connections. On February 28th, three bids were received for the installation of approximately just under 2,600 feet of sanitary sewer main and rehabilitation of 117 vertical feet of sanitary manhole. We received three bids. The first was from Vigisewer for $81,035. Terra Engineering Construction, $90,867. Michaels Corporation for $96,888. The approved 2013 sewer utility capital budget for this project was $100,000. Vicious Sewer has completed sanitary sewer relining in the past. More specifically, last year they did a really nice job with it. Pipe relining has become a very popular rehabilitation method. It's much cheaper than reconstructing it. A new liner is pulled into the existing sewer main and cured into place. It's really the most cost-effective method and is recommended for this project. So I recommend a contract be awarded to Vicious Sewer for sanitary sewer lining services and manhole rehabilitation. Phase two of the Cooper Road Sanitary Sewer Rehab Project, not to exceed $81,035. I can answer any questions.
Do you want to just explain the process they go through with this?
Sure. Is there another math associate? There you go. What they do is, I'm going to start off with the picture on the left. They have a truck and they have a liner. And so if you can imagine what a clay sanitary sewer looks like, it's pieces of pipe about 2 feet together stacked in 2 feet. So there is a lot of infiltration that happens with that. They take the liner in a truck, and it's actually inverted. They put some epoxy on it, and then they invert it through an inverter. It's the upright blue thing off to the left. And then they come down, and then they pull it through the entire sanitary sewer. They fill the main up with air and actually cures it in place. And then they come back with a little robotic arm cutter and they cut where the lateral holes are. And so that's phase one that we're working on right now. The next phase will be relining of the sanitary sewer laterals, which they also do from inside the pipe. And so it's a way that they can go through and put a new structure, a very low flow resistant liner in a pipe without having to go down and tear up the road, the utilities, and it's much cheaper to do that. A little bit cleaner, but yes.
So they're actually relining it, Mike.
John, how long do you anticipate this phase taking?
It should be done in under a week. The first phase they did in under a week, they started on a Monday, they were out by Thursday night.
John, what are the thickness of the lining cost in the pipe?
How much does it cost?
No, the lining. The thickness of the lining.
About how thick of it? It's about a quarter inch. And so actually with the amount of flow that you stop from coming in and the increased flow resistance, it's that half inch loss of capacity really isn't an issue because you're only allowing the amount of water that it was actually designed for in there. And so by taking out the extra water for the infiltration and making it much smoother, the water can flow a lot faster through there.
I have a question. John, what if there's a break in that in the liner? And what's the repair on that?
Well, they can just run down and grout around it. It's a pretty standard practice. It doesn't happen. We've had liners in for probably 10, 12 years that have held up very well. It actually cures into a very structural material, and I actually have a sample. I should have brought it, but I can make sure that I can bring it to you to a see.
That's good.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to award the contract to Vicious Sewer in the amount of $81,035.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item G, consent agenda. We're now only dealing with items 1 and 3.
Move approval.
Second.
Yes, item 2, the letter of credit was enriched, and we received it today, so we do not have to act on item 2.
Motion by Mike, second by?
Steve.
Any discussion on the agenda? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 9, Village Board comments.
I would just like to remind everyone tomorrow night there is a school board forum. The candidates will be here tomorrow night at the Village Hall at 6:30. It starts. The Pleasant Prairie Women's Club will be hosting it. It will also be televised on Channel 25. And then Thursday night, the Women's Club is also hosting the Municipal Judge Forum. Both candidates will be present, and that starts at 7 o'clock at the Village Hall.
Anything else under Village Board comments? If not, we'll move on to item 10. That's consider entering into executive session. Pursuant to Section 19.95 per N1 per NG, Wisconsin statutes, to confer with legal counsel for the governmental body who is rendering oral or written advice concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike. We need a roll call.
Yes, we do. Mr. Steinbrink.
Aye.
Steve Komorkiewicz.
Aye.
Mike Serpy.
Aye.
Monica Juhas.
Aye.
Clyde Allen.
Aye.
The board will return to open session for the purpose of adjournment only. No other business will be conducted.